This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
I'd like to thank all three of you for being on. Brenda Talby. And when is your next show? September 15th?
September 15th at the J Lounge. With the lovely Simone Clanton and whatever three hooligans I can round up to read with me.
Awesome. And I'd like to thank Leah Rainier.
Rainer, sorry. Unlike the mountain, I only have one eye.
Or the beer.
I sometimes like the beer, but, you know.
You're not above the beer.
Yeah. But you have a book that's going to be out, Metrophobia, sometime in the next year.
Yeah, sometime in the next 20 years, you might see a book that I made.
Metrophobia.
Stapled together in a gutter. I don't know.
And Joy Pearson, you have a show coming up.
It's true, at Kelly's Olympian on the 27th.
All right. We'll all be there.
And thanks everyone for listening to Talking Earth. We'll be back with Walt Curtis hosting next month, second Monday of the month. Stay tuned. This is KBL Portland. Stay tuned for Gremlin Time.
Taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you. It's the Tiki Cha-Cha Club, KBOO's all-vinyl guilty pleasure. Monday nights, midnight to 1 a.m. on 90.7 FM stereo and around the world at kboo.fm.
This is KBOO Portland, community radio for the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned at midnight for Joe Woods and the Tiki Cha-Cha Club. Right now, it's the bedtime radio show for grown-ups, Gremlin Time.
Vagrant winds stirred tiny dust ebbies where the road to California became for a few hundred yards the main street of Capitan. A few mongrel dogs lazed in the shade of the false-fronted frame buildings. Horses at the hitching tracks stomped and switched flies. A child loitered along the boardwalk. Except for these signs of life, Capitan might have been a ghost town deserted to sun and wind. Covered wagon creaked slowly along the road from the east. The horses, gaunt and old, leaned forward with each lurching step. The girl on the seat peered under a shading hand and spoke to the old man beside her. "There's a town ahead, father," he nodded. "Capitan. We won't waste time there. A bad town. Heard of it ever since we crossed the Pecos. A haunt of renegades and refugees. We must stop there long enough just to buy bacon and coffee." His tired old voice encouraged the laboring horses.
Get on there.
Dust of the long, long trail shifted grayly from the wagon bed as they creaked into Capitan.
You are entering a zone of sound and imagery. A landscape of frequency. A vocabulary of modulation. There is the signpost up ahead. Please adjust your chronometers. This is Gremlin Time.
Good evening, this is Fortunato. Tonight we're going to go back to the Old West, or at least the Old West of the pulp magazines from the 1930s, as we present another story by one of our favorite authors, Robert E. Howard. Now, Howard was known for combining adventure stories with fantasy. His Conan the Barbarian is his probably most famous creation. But he was also known for combining fantasy and horror in the settings of the old American West. And, you know, he did this so that he could sell his stories to a wide variety of magazines besides just the adventure magazines. But in the process, he did write a lot of just straightforward westerns. Westerns in the classic style with the great purple prose of the old pulp magazines. So let's listen now to Vulture's Sanctuary, a classic Western by Robert E. Howard. Capitan, baking under the sun that drew a curtain of shimmering heat waves between it and the bare Guadalupes, rising from the rolling wastelands to the south. Capitan, haunt of the hunted, yet not the last haunt, not the ultimate, irrevocable refuge for the desperate and damned. But not all who came to Capitan were scarred with the Wolf Trail brand. One was standing even then at the bar of the Four Aces Saloon, frowning at the man before him. Big Mac, cowpuncher from Texas, broad shoulder, deep chest, with thews hardened to the toughness of woven steel by years on the cattle trails that stretched from the long oaks of the Gulf Marches to the prairies of Canada. A familiar figure wherever cowmen gathered, with his broad brown face, volcanic blue eyes, and unruly thatch of curly black hair. There were no notches in the butt of the big Colt 45 which jutted from the scabbard at his right hip, but that butt was worn smooth from much usage. Big Mac did not notch his gun, but it had blazed in range wars and cowtown feuds from the Sabine to Milk River. "You're Big Bill Callahan, ain't you?" the other man asked with a strange eagerness his casual manner could not conceal. "You remember me?"
"Yeah."
A man with many enemies must have a keen memory for faces.
"You're the Chakota Kid. I saw you in Hayes City 3 years ago."
"Yeah, let's drink." Kid's gesture, the bartender sent glasses and a bottle sliding down the wet bar. The kid was Mac's opposite in type, slender though hard as steel, smooth-faced, blonde. His wide gray eyes seemed guileless at first glance, but a man wise in the ways of men could see cruelty and murderous treachery lurking in their depths. But something else burned there now, something fearful and hunted. There was a nervous tension underlying the kid's manner that puzzled Big Mac, who remembered him as a suave, self-possessed young scoundrel of the Kansas trail towns. Doubtless he was on the dodge, yet that did not explain his nervousness, for there was no law in Capitan, and the border was less than 100 miles to the south. Now the kid leaned toward him and lowered his voice, though only the bartender and a loafer at a table shared the saloon with them. "Mac, I need a partner. Found color in the Guadalupe. Gold, sure as hell."
"Never knew you were a prospector."
"Man gets to be lots of things." Kid's laugh was mirthless. "I mean it."
"Why don't you stay and work it then?"
"El Bravo's gang ran me out. Thought I was a sheriff or something. You heard of El Bravo, maybe? Head's a gang of outlaws hang out in the Guadalupes. But with a man to watch and another to work, we could take out plenty. The pocket's in a canyon just in the edge of the hills. What you say?"
Again, that flaming intentness.
His eyes burned on Big Mac like the eyes of a condemned man seeking reprieve. The Texan emptied his glass and shook his head.
"I'm no prospector," he mumbled. "I'm sick of work anyway. I ain't never had a vacation all my life. A few days in town at the end of the drive or before a roundup. I quit my job at the Lazy K 3 weeks ago, and I'm heading for San Francisco to enjoy life for a spell. I'm tired of cow towns. I want to see what a real city looks like."
"But it's a fortune," urged the kid passionately, his gray eyes blazing with a weird light. "You'd be a fool to pass it up."
Big Mac bristled. He never liked Chakota anyway, but he merely replied, "Well, maybe so, but that's how she stands."
You won't do it?"
It was almost a whisper.
Sweat beaded the kid's forehead.
"No, looks like to me you could find some other partner easy enough." Mac turned away, reaching for the bottle.
It was a glimpse of the big mirror behind the bar, caught from the tail of his eye, that saved his life. In that fleeting reflection, he saw the Chakota Kid his face a livid mask of desperation, draw his pistol. Big Mac whirled, knocking the gun aside with the bottle in his hand. The smash of the breaking glass mingled with the bang of the shot. The bullet ripped through the slack of the Texan's shirt and thudded into the wall. Almost simultaneously, Mac crashed his left fist full into the kid's face. The killer staggered backward, a smoking pistol escaping his numbed fingers. Mac was after him like a big catamount. There could be no quarter in such a fight. Mac did not spare his strength, for he knew the kid was deadly. Knew he had killed half a dozen men already, some treacherously. He might have another gun hidden on him somewhere. But it was a knife he was groping for as he reeled backward under the sledgehammer impact of the Texan's fist. He found it, just as a thundering clout on the jaw knocked him headlong backward through the door to fall sprawling in the dusty street. He lay still, stunned, blood trickling from his mouth. Big Mac strode swiftly toward him to learn whether or not he was possuming. But he never reached him. There was a quick patter, a light feet, swish of skirts, and even as Mac saw the girl spring in front of him, he received a resounding slap on his startled face. He recoiled, glaring in amazement at the slender figure which confronted him, vibrant with anger. "Don't you dare touch him again, you big bully," he panted, her dark eyes blazing. "You coward, you brute, attacking a boy half your size." He found no words to reply. He did not fully realize how savage and formidable he looked with his fierce eyes and dark, scarred face. As he stood there with his mallet-like fists clenched, glaring down at the man he had knocked down. He looked like a giant beside the slender kid. Jacoby looked boyish, innocent. To the girl, ignorant of men's ways, it looked like the brutal attack of a ruffian on an inoffensive boy. Mac realized this vaguely, but he could not find words to defend himself. She had not seen the Bowie knife, which had fallen in the dust. A small crowd was gathering, silent and inscrutable. The loafer, who had been in the saloon, was among them. An old man, his hands gnarled and his bony shoulders stooped, came from the store that stood next to the saloon with bundles in his hands. He started toward a dust-stained wagon standing beside a board fence just beyond the store, and saw the crowd and hurried toward it, concern shadowing his eyes. The girl turned lithely and knelt beside the kid, who was struggling into a seating position. He saw the pity in her wet, dark eyes and understood. Chakotay would play his cards as they fell.
"Don't let him kill me, miss," he groaned. I wasn't doing anything."
"He shan't touch you," she assured him, flashing a look of defiance at Big Mac. He wiped the blood from the kid's mouth and looked angrily at the taciturn, leather-faced men who stood about.
"You should be ashamed of yourselves," she stormed with the ignorant courage of the very young, "letting a bully like him abuse a boy."
They made no response. Only their lips twisted a little in grim, sardonic humor she could not understand. Big Mac, his dark face, muttered under his breath and turned on his heel, re-entered the saloon. In there, the voices reached him only as an incoherent murmur, the faltering, hypocritical voice of the kid followed quickly by the soothing, sympathetic tones of the girl. Hell's fire. Big Mac grabbed the whiskey bottle.
"Women is sure funny critters," replied the bartender, scouring the bar.
Mac snarled a scourged conversation.
"Arr."
The Texan took the bottle to a table at the back of the saloon. He was smarting mentally. The slap the girl had given him was no more than the tap of a feather, but a deeper sting persisted. He was angry and humiliated. A slip of a girl had abused him like, as he would put it, an egg-sucking dog. Like most men of the wild trails, he was extremely sensitive where women were concerned. Indifferent to the opinions of men, a woman's scorn or anger could hurt him deeply. Like all men of his breed, he held women in high esteem and desired their good opinion. But this girl had condemned him on the appearance of things. His sense of justice was outraged. His soul harbored a sting not to be soothed by the thought of the 1,000-odd dollars in greenbacks in his pocket.
nor the anticipation of spending them in the faraway city which he had never seen. He drank, and drank again. His face grew darker. His blue eyes burned more savagely. As he sat there, huge, dark and brooding, he looked capable of any wild, ferocious deed. So, thought the man, who after a while entered fugitively and slipped into a chair opposite him. Big Mac scowled at him. He knew him as Slip Ratner, one of the many shady characters which haunted Capitan. "I was in here when the kid drawn on you," said Ratner, a vague, evil smile twisting in his lips. "That girl sure hauled you over the cold, didn't she?" "Shut up," snarled Big Mac. Rabbi. Sure, soothed Ratner. "No offense. Sassy snip she was. You oughta smacked her face for her." "Listen," he hunched forward and lowered his voice. "How'd you like to get even with that fresh dame?" Big Mac merely grunted. He was paying little attention to what Ratner was saying. Yet even with a woman, the thought never entered his mind. His code did not permit a retaliation against women, or whatever the qualification. Ratner was speaking again, hurriedly. "I don't know why the kid tried to drill you, but that gold talk of his was a lie. He's been in the Guadalupes, yes, but after gold, he's trying to join up with El Bravo. I have ways of knowing things. Cote hit Capitan just a few days ago. He's just a few jumps ahead of the federal marshal. Besides that, there's reward notices for him stuck up all over Mexico. He's killed and robbed on both sides of the line till there ain't but one place left for him, El Bravo's hideout in the Guadalupes. That's where men go when both the United States and Mexico are barred to them. But El Bravo don't take in no man free. They have to buy into the gang. You remember Stark Campbell and that robbed the bank at Nogales? He got $10,000, and he had to give every cent of it to El Bravo to join the gang. Tough, but it was that or his life. They say El Bravo's got a regular treasure trove hid away somewhere up there in the Guadalupes. But Chakotay didn't have nothing. Now Bravo wouldn't take him. Kid's desperate. If he stayed here, the law would get him in a few days and there wasn't no place else for him to go. When I see him playing up that fool girl, I figured he had something up his sleeve, and he did. He begged them to take him out of town with him. Said he was afraid they'd murder him if he stayed in Capitan. And you know what they'd done? Invited him to go on to California with them. They laid him in the wagon, him pretending to be crippled, and pulled out the girl washing the blood off his face and his saddle horse tied to the tailboard. Well, when they took him in the wagon, I sneaked up behind that board fence and listened to him talk. The girl told Chakotay everything. Her name's is Ellis. She's Judith Ellis. The old man's got $1,000 he'd saved up working on a farm back in Illinois or somewhere, and he aims to use it making first payment on a piece of irrigated land in California. Now, I know the kid, he ain't going to California. Why, he don't even dare show himself in the next town. Up beyond Scalping Knife, somewhere along the trail, he'll kill old Ellis and head for the Guadalupes with the money and the girl. He'll pay his way into the Bravo gang with them. El Bravo likes women, and she's pretty enough for any man. Here's where we come in. I don't figure the kid'll strike till after they pass Seven Mule Pass. That's 9 miles from here. If we get on our horses and ride through the sagebrush, we can get past them and waylay them in the pass. And we could wait till a kid kills the old man, then crack down on him. We kill the kid, and that evens you up with him. Then we split the loot. I take the money, you take the girl. Nobody else know. Plenty of places in the mountains we can take her, for an instant, Big Mac sat silent, glaring incredulously at the leering face before him. The monstrous proposal soaked in. Ratner could not probably interpret his stunned silence. Ratner credited all men with his own buzzard instincts. "What do you say?"
"Why, you damned..."
Big Mac's eyes flared red as he heaved up. The table crashed sideways, bottles smashing on the floor. Ratner, almost pinned under it, yelped in fright and fury as he jumped clear. He snatched at a pistol as the berserk cowman towered over him. Mac did not waste lead on him. His movement was like the swipe of a bear's paw as his hand locked on Ratner's wrist. Renegade screamed, a bone snapped, pistol flew into the corner, and Big Mac hurled a snarling wrench after it. It lay in a stunned, crumpled heap. Men scattered as Big Mac stormed out of the saloon and made for the hitching rack where stood his big bay gelding. A few moments later, the giant Texan thundered out of town in a whirlwind of dust and took the road that ran west. You're listening to a short story by the great pulp writer Robert E. Howard, entitled Vulture's Sanctuary. We'll have part two after this.
Outlaw, ooh, lobo. Lobo, wild wolf, outlaw of your tribe. Fear not this outlaw, Lobo, turn not from my side. I know you're lonesome, come show me where you hide. Just two lonesome outlaws, Lobo, wandering far and wide. Lobo, wild wolf, what crime did you do? Are you really outlaw, Lobo? Are the stories true? They call you devil, a clever devil too. Then wait for this outlaw, Lobo, and I'll follow you. Ooh, Lobo, wild wolf, outlaw, Lobo. Ooh, Lobo, where can we go and never hear? Lobo, wild wolf, go you silently off to the foothills in the shadow of each tree. You know there's danger, the danger I can't see. But you're not the outlaw, Lobo. This time they want me. Ooh, Lobo, wild wolf, outlaw, Lobo. Ooh, Lobo. Run, 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 Lobo, and for me. Run, Lobo, and hide.
Sons of the Pioneers with Outlaw. You're listening to Gremlin Time. This is Fortunato. Tonight we're presenting a classic Western story, I believe first appeared in the November 1936 issue of Argosy magazine and was written by the great Robert E. Howard. So let's return to our our Western drama, Vulture's Sanctuary.
Thank you.
East of Capitan, the road stretched across the dusty level and was visible for miles, which was an advantage to the citizens, for it was from the east that sheriffs and the federal marshals were more likely to come riding. But westward, the terrain changed to a broken country in which the road disappeared from view of the town within a mile. Miles away to the southwest rose the grim outlines of the Guadalupes, shimmering under a sky tinted silver white by the morning sun. Haunt of fierce desert killers they had always been, painted red men once, and later sombrero bandito. But never had they sheltered more deadly slayers than the gang of the mysterious El Bravo. Big Mac had heard of him, had heard too that few knew his real identity, save that he was a white man. The town disappeared behind him, and after that the Texan passed only one habitation, the adobe hut of a Mexican sheep herder some 5 miles west of Capitan. A mile further on, the trail dipped down into the broad, deep canyon cut by Scalping Knife River in its southerly course. Now, only a trickle of water in its shallow bed. 3 miles beyond the canyon lay a chain of hills, a spur of the Guadalupes, through which the road threaded by 7 mule paths. There it was that Ratner expected to lay ambush. Big Mac expected to overhaul a slow-moving wagon long before it reached the pass. But as he rode down the eastern slope of the canyon, he grunted and stiffened at the sight of the form lying limply on the canyon floor. The kid had not waited to get beyond the pass. Mac bent over old man Ellis. He'd been shot through the left shoulder and was unconscious. He had lost a great deal of blood, but the thrum of his old heart was strong. The wagon was nowhere in sight. Wheeled tracks wandered away up the canyon. The tracks of a single horse went down the canyon. Big Mac read the sign easy. Ratner had prophesied unerringly, with the wisdom of a wolf concerning the ways of wolves. Cote had shot the old man, probably without warning. The team, frightened, had run away with the wagon. The kid had ridden down the canyon with the girl and without doubt the old man's pitiful savings. Mac staunched the flow of blood with his bandana. He lifted the senseless man across the saddle and turned back on his trail, leading the big bay and cursing as the rocks of the flinty trail turned under his high-heeled boots. Back at the sheepherder's hut, a mile from the canyon, he lifted the wounded man down and carried him in and laid him on a bunk. There's a wagon and team up the canyon. Send a boy to find him and bring him back here. Mac tore a $10 bill in two and handed one half to the old man.
If he's alive when I get back, you get the other half. If he ain't, I'll make you hard to catch.
Si, senor. The old man at once gave his attention to the wounded man. Mac headed back for the canyon. The kid had not bothered to hide his side. There was no law in Capitan. There were men there who would not have allowed him to kidnap a girl if they could have prevented it. But they would not attempt to follow him into the outlaw-haunted Guadalupe. The trail was plain down the canyon. He followed it for 3 miles. The walls growing steeper and higher as the canyon wound deeper and deeper into the hills. The trail turned aside up a narrow ravine, and Mac, following it, came out upon a benchland, dry and sandy, hemmed in by the slopes of the mountains. On the south edge of the flat, buzzards rose and flapped heavily away. They had not feasted. They had been waiting with grisly patience for a feast. A few moments later, Big Mac looked down on the sprawling form of the Jacoti kid. He'd been shot in the open, and a smear of blood on the sand showed how he had
wiggled an agonizing way to the shade of a big rock. He'd been shot through the body near the heart. His eyes are glazed, and at each choking grasp, bloody bubbles burst on his blue lips. Big Mac looked down on him with hard, merciless eyes. "You dirty skunk, I'm sorry somebody beat me to it. Where's the girl?"
"Well, Brawl took her," patted the kid. "They saw me riding with the flag, came to meet me. I gave him the girl, paid my way into the gang. Tried to hold out on the thousand. I took off for the old... took off the old man. Grabbed me, searched me. A Bravo shot me for trying to hold out."
"Where'd they take her?"
"Hide out. I don't know where. Nobody knows but them." The kid's voice was growing weaker and thicker. "Watch the trails all the time. Nobody can get in the Guadalupes without them knowing it. Carried the signal flag. Only reason I got this far."
He gestured vaguely toward a cotton wool limb with a shred of white cloth tied to it, which lay near him. Curiosity prompted Big Mac's next question. "Why'd you try to shoot me? You never had no trouble in Kansas."
"You were to be my prize. That's why I tried to lure you into the hills. Oh, Bravo, I'd rather have you alive." "But he wouldn't come. I thought if I brought him proof, I downed you. Maybe he'd take me in anyway. He's Garth Bessett."
Garth Bessett. That explained many things. There were reasons why Bessett should hate Big Mac. They first met in a Kansas cow town at the end of a cattle trail from Texas. Bessett was marshal of that town, a hard man, wary as a wolf, quick as summer lightning, with the iron-butted pistols that hung at his hips, and with all as rotten-souled a scoundrel as ever ruled a Buzzard Roost trail town. It was Big Mac who broke his dominion, going to the aid of a young cowboy framed by one of Bessett's gunfighting deputies. The big herd boss had left the deputy dead on a dance hall floor after a blur of gun smoke. And in the dead man's pockets were found letters revealing the extent of Bessett's crookedness, proof of theft and murder. A federal marshal stepped into the game. Bessett might have escaped, but he paused at the cow camp at the edge of town to even scores with the big trail driver. Big Mac came out of the gunplay that followed with a bullet in his breast muscle, while Bessett, his left broken by a slug from Mac's .45, was taken by the federal man. He was tried and sentenced to life imprisonment, but on the way to the penitentiary, escaped and dropped out of sight. Rumors said he had fled to Mexico and become involved in a revolution. Mac absently noted that the kid was dead. Without another glance, he mounted and rode deeper into the hills, following the faint trail the slayers had left. His face was darker and grimmer, but the shadow of a sardonic smile played about the corners of his hard mouth. In one hand, he carried the makeshift flag the kid had borne. He had made his plan, a desperate, reckless plan, with one chance in 1,000 of success. But it was the only one. He knew that he could not go into the Guadalupe shooting. If he tried to force his way to the bandit hangout, even if he should find it, he would be shot from ambush long before he got there. There was but one way to reach the heart of El Bravo's stronghold. He was taking that way. He did not ask himself why he followed the trail of a girl who meant nothing to him. It was part of him that he should do so. Man went to the aid of a woman in distress, regardless of who she might be. That was all there was to it. And so Big Mac was going to the aid of the girl who had despised him. Instead of riding on his way to the far-off city where he expected to squander the wad of greenbacks he carried in his pocket. Only he knew how much hard work and self-denial they represented. He had left the flat a few miles behind him.
I was riding through a ragged defile when a harsh voice brawled an order to halt. Instantly, he pulled up and elevated his hands. The command came from a cluster of boulders to the right.
Who are you? What do you want?
Came the crisp question. I'm Big Mac. I'm looking for El Bravo. What you got for him? I got myself.
Are you crazy?
No, take me to Bassett. If he don't thank you, he'll be crazy.
Get off your horse. Now unbuckle your gun belt and let her drop. Now step back away from it. Further back, blast you.
Keep your hands up. I got a .45-70 trained on your heart all this time. Big Mac did exactly as he was told. He was standing there, unarmed, his hands in the air. When the man came from behind the rocks, a tall man walked with the springy tread of a cougar. Mac knew him instantly. Stark Campbell, he said softly. So this is why they never got you.
And they never will, neither.
They can't get you up here in the Guadalupes. But a man has to pay high to get in. What you done that you want in? Never mind that. Just lead me to Bess. I'll have to take you to the hangout. He don't let nobody see the hangout and live unless they're in his gang. And if he don't let you join us, he'll kill you. You can go back, though, if you want to now. I won't stop you. You ain't no law. I want to see Bessett. Campbell shrugged his shoulders and drew a pistol, laying aside the rifle. He ordered Big Mac to turn around and put his hands behind him, and the outlaw then bound his wrists awkwardly with one hand, for he kept the pistol muzzle jammed in Mac's back with the other. But when the Texan's hands were partly confined, he completed the job with both hands. And Campbell led his own horse, a rangy roan, from behind the rocks and hung Mac's gun belt over the roan's saddle horn. Get on your horse. I'll help you up. They started on, Campbell leading the big bay. For 3 or 4 miles, they threaded a precarious path through as wild and broken a country as Mac had ever seen, until they entered a steep-walled canyon which apparently came to a blind end ahead of them as the walls pinched together. But as they entered it, Big Mac saw a cleft in the angle, 50 feet above the canyon floor, and reached by a narrow, winding trail.
Yo!
A man hailed them from above.
It's me, Campbell,
shouted his captor. A growling voice bade them advance.
Go ahead.
This is the only way in or out of our hangout, said Campbell. See how much chance a posse have of getting in, even if they found it. One man with plenty of shells could hold that left again a army. They went up the trail, single file. Their horses crowded against the wall, fearful of the narrow footing. Mac knew that Campbell spoke the truth when he said no posse could charge up that trail, raked by fire from above. As they entered the cleft, the black-whiskered man rose from behind a large rock and glared suspiciously at them.
All right, Wilson, I'm taking this fellow to Bassett. Ain't that Big Mac?
Yes, Wilson, to whom Mac recognized another lost outlaw.
What's he got for Bassett?
You know the rule well as me. Nobody takes money off him except Bassett. Come on, Mac. If you got something Bassett will accept, I'll take your ropes off. And if you ain't, you won't be caring anyway, not with a bullet through your head.
The cleft was like a tunnel in the rock. It ran for 40 feet and then widened out into a space that was like a continuation of the canyon they had left. It formed a bowl, its floor higher than the floor of the canyon outside by 50 feet, walled by unbroken cliffs 300 feet high and apparently unscapable. Campbell confirmed it.
Ain't nobody can get at us from them cliffs.
They're as steep outside as inside. It's just like somebody scooped a holler in the middle of a rock mesa. The holler's this bowl.
Go on, get in.
Big Mac managed it with his hands bound, and Campbell left the horses standing in the shade of the wall, reins hanging. He drove Big Mac before him toward the adobe hut that stood in the middle of the bowl, surrounded by a square rock wall breast high to a tall man. Last line of defense, even if a posse was to get in the bowl, which ain't possible, we could fight them off indefinitely. There's a spring inside the stockade, and we got provisions and cartridges enough for a year. The renegade marshal had always been a master of strategy. Big Mac did not believe the outlaw hangout would ever fall by a direct attack, regardless of the numbers assailing it, if it were ever discovered by the lawman. A man Campbell, addressed as Garrison, came from the corral adjoining the wall, where a dozen horses grazed, and another met them at the heavy plank gate built to turn bullets. "Why, hell, that's Big Mac. Where'd you catch him?" "He rode in with a flag of truth, Emmett. Blessed in the shack." Evidently, Emmett knew something of Bassett's former life. The three men followed Mac as he strode across the yard towards the hut. Stark Campbell, John Garrison, Red Emmett, Wolf Wilson back there at the tunnel. He had indeed come into the last haunt of the hunted, last retreat of these most desperate of all the border renegades, to whom all other doors were barred, against whom the hands of all men were raised. Only in this lost canyon of the Guadalupes could they find sanctuary, the refuge of the wolf's lair, for which they had fortified all their blood-tinged gains. Theirs could only be a wolf-pack alliance. Bassett dominated them by virtue of keener wits and swifter gun hand. They hated him for the brutal avarice that stripped from them their last shred of plunder in return for a chance of bare life. But they feared him, too, and recognized his superiority, knew that without his leadership, the pack must perish, despite all natural advantages. Campbell pushed the door open. As Big Mac loomed in the doorway, the man in the room turned with the blurring speed of a wolf, his hand streaking to an ivory-handled gun, even in the instant it took him to see the stranger was a captive, with his hands bound behind him. "You!" was the ripping snarl of a timber wolf. Bassett was as tall as Big Mac, but not so heavy. He was wiry, rangy, yellow mustaches drooping below a mouth thin as a knife gash, his pale eyes glittering with an icy, blood-chilling fire. "What the hell?" he snarled, stunned with surprise. Big Mac looked past him to the girl, cringed in the corner, her eyes wide with terror. There was no hope in them when they met his. To her, he was but another beast of prey. Big Mac grunted at Bassett without words. "Come to join your gang, Garth," he said calmly. "Heard you had to have a gift. Well, I'm it. I've heard you've bid high for my hide." He was gambling on his knowledge of Bassett's nature, on the chance that the outlaw would not instantly shoot him down. They faced each other, the big, dark Texan smiling, a trifle grimly, but calm. Bassett, snarling, tense, suspicious as a wolf. "Where'd you get him, Campbell?"
"He come in under a flag of truth. Same as any man that wants to join up with us. Said you'd be glad to see him."
Bassett turned on Mac, his eyes shining like a wolf's that scents a trap.
"Why'd you come here?" "No fool. You wouldn't put yourself in my power unless you had a damn good reason. Some edge."
He whirled on his men in a frenzy of suspicion.
"Get out on the walls, damn you. Watch them cliffs. Watch everything. This devil wouldn't come in here alone unless he had something up his sleeve."
"Well, I..." began Campbell, but Bassett's voice cut his sullen drawl.
"Get out there.
I do the thinking for the gang." Mac saw the unveiled hate in Campbell's eyes as he slouched silently out with the others. Saw Bassett's eyes dwell burningly on the man. Bad blood there. Campbell feared Bassett less than the others, and was therefore the focus of the wolfish chief's suspicion. As the men left the building, Bassett picked up a double-barreled shotgun and cocked it.
"I don't know what your game is," he said between his teeth. "You must have a gang following you or something. Whatever happens, I aim to get you."
Mac appeared helpless, unarmed, his hands bound. But a wolf-like suspicion of appearances was at once Bassett's strength and his weakness.
You're no outlaw. You don't come here to join my gang. You knew I'd skin you alive or stake you out on an ant bed. What are you up to?
Big Mac laughed in his face. A man who followed the herds up the long trail year after year learned to judge men as well as animals. Bessett was reacting exactly as Mac had expected him to. The Texan was playing the knowledge blindly, waiting for some kind of a break, a desperate game. But he was used to games where the devil dealt for deadly stakes. You ain't got a very big gang, Bassett, he said.
They're not all here. Some are out on a raid toward the border. Never mind, what's your game? If you talk, your finish will be easier.
Mac glanced again at Judith Ellis, cowering in a corner, stark terror in her eyes, wide. To this girl, unused to violence, her experience was like a nightmare. My game, Bassett? Asked Big Mac coolly. What could it be? Nobody could get past Wilson in the tunnel, could they? Nobody could climb the cliffs, could they? What good would it do if I did have a gang following me like you think?
You wouldn't come here without an ace in the hole, Bassett all but whispered.
Well, what about your own men? Big Mac played his ace. Bassett blanched. His suspicions crystallized for the moment. Suspicions of Big Mac's coming. Suspicions of his own men, which forever gnawed at his brain. His eyes, glaring at Mac over the shotgun's black muzzles, were tinged with madness. You're trapped, Bessett, jeered Big Mac, playing his hand from minute to minute. For whatever it might be worth, your own men have sold you out for the loot you took from them and hid. And at that moment, the break came. Outside, Campbell had turned back towards the adobe, and Mac saw him and yelled, Campbell, help! Bassett whirled like a flash, shifting his shotgun to the cover his amazed follower. It was an instinctive movement. Even so, he would not have pulled the triggers, would not have seen through Mac's flimsy scheme had he had time to think. But Mac saw and took his desperate chance. He hurled himself headlong against Bassett, and at the impact of the shotgun hammers hung on the hair triggers, fell to the involuntary convulsive jerk of Bassett's fingers. Both barrels exploded as Bassett went down under Mac's hurling body and buckshot blasted Stark Campbell's skull. He died on his feet without knowing why. That was a chance. Mac did not, could not have planned his death. As they went down together, Mac drove his knee savagely into Bassett's belly and rolled clear as the outlaw doubled in gasping agony. Mac heaved up on his feet somehow, roaring, his knife, quick, cut these ropes. The impact of his voice jolted the terrified girl into action. She sprang blindly forward, snatched the knife from Bassett's boot, and sawed at the cords that held Mac's wrists, slicing skin as well as hemp. It had all happened in a stunned instant. Outside, Garrison and Emmett were running down toward the house with guns in their hands. Some of the strands parted under the blade, and Mac snapped the others. He stooped and dragged Bassett to his feet. The half-senseless outlaw was clawing dazedly at his pistols. Mac jerked them from him and swung the lip frame before him. Tell your men to get back. I'll obey you. Tell them quick. But the order was never given. The men outside did not know what had happened in the hut. They'd only seen Campbell blasted down by a shot through the doorway, and they thought their leader was turning against them. Emmett caught a glimpse of Bassett through the door and fired. Mac felt Bassett's body jerk convulsively in his hands. The bullet had drilled to the outlaw's head. Mac threw the corpse aside and fired from the hip. Emmett, struck in the mouth, went down heavily on his back. Garrison, as he saw Emmett fall and Mac lean in the doorway, began to fall back, firing as he went. He was making for the protection of the corral. Once there, he might make a long fight of it. Wilson would be coming up from the tunnel. If it came to a siege, the girl would be endangered by the raking lead. Mac sprang recklessly into the open, shooting two-handed. He felt hot lead rip through his shirt, burn the skin on his ribs. Garrison snarled, whirled, sprang for the wall. In mid-stride, he staggered drunkenly. Hard hit. He reeled. He started shooting again, even as he crumpled, holding his six-shooter in both hands. Hit again, and yet again. He kept on pulling the trigger, his bullets knocking up the dirt in front of Big Mac's boots. His pistol snapped on an empty chamber before he lurched to the ground and lay still in a sprawling red puddle. Mac heard Judith scream and simultaneously came around behind him and the impact of a blow that knocked him staggering. He came about in a drunken semicircle, glimpsing Wilson's black-bearded face. The outlaw was straddling the wall, preparing to leap down inside before he fired again. Mac's last bullet broke his neck and dropped him at the foot of the wall, flopping for a dozen seconds like a beheaded chicken. In the deafening silence that followed the roar of the guns, Mac turned back toward the hut, blood streaming down his shirt. The pale girl cowered in the door, still uncertain as to her fate. His first words reassured her. "Don't be scared, miss. I come to take you back to your dad." And she was clinging to him, weeping in hysterical relief. "Well, you're hurt. You're bleeding." "Just a slug in my shoulder," grunted self-consciously. "Ain't nothing." "Let me dress it," she begged, and he followed her into the hut. She avoided looking at Bassett, sprawled in a red pool, as she bound up Mac's shoulder with strips torn from her dress, fumbling and clumsily. I misjudged you. I'm sorry. The kid, he was a beast. My father? Your dad's all right. Just drilled through the shoulder, like me. Some rotten shooting in these parts. A couple of horses standing at the mouth of the tunnel. Go on out there and wait for me." After she had gone, he began a hasty search, and presently he desisted, swearing. Neither the pockets of the dead chief nor a hastily ransacking of the rooms rewarded him with what he'd sought. The money taken from Ellis had gone to join the rest of Bassett's loot in whatever crypt he had hidden it in. Surely he had planned someday a flight to some other continent with his plunder. But whatever it was well hidden. A man might hunt it for years in vain, and Big Mac had not time for hunting. Bassett might have been lying when he said he had other men out on a raid, but with the girl, Mac could not take the chance of being caught by returning outlaws. He hurried from the hut. The girl had already mounted Campbell's roan. A few minutes later, they were riding together down the outer canyon. "I found that 1,000 Chakotay took off your dad," he announced, handing her a wad of dingy greenbacks. "Next time, don't tell nobody about it." "You're a gallant angel. It's all we had. We'd have starved without it. I don't know how I'll ever thank you." "Shucks, don't try. Your shoulder hurt." But another deeper sting was gone, and Big Mac grinned contentedly, even as he slapped his flat pocket and reflected on the dusty miles. Back to the Lazy K in Texas, where the job he had quit still awaited him. After all, he reckoned he could get along another year without a vacation. You've been listening to Vulture's Sanctuary, a Western from 1936 and Argosy Magazine, written by the great Robert E. Howard. This is Fortunato. You're listening to Gremlin Time. Let's see if we can find some cowboy music here.
The cattle are prowling, the coyotes are howling, way out where the dog is bold. Where spurs are a-jingling, a cowboy is singing this lonesome cattle call. Till his day's work is done, and he rounds up the cattle each fall. Singing his cattle call. For hours he would ride on the range, reaches far and wide. When the night winds blow up a swamp, his heart is a feather. In all kinds of weather, he sings his cattle call. And he sings with an old western drawl. Singing his cattle call. Nightly, while the moon is beaming brightly along the Santa Fe Trail. Stardust scattered all along the highway on a rainbow-colored skyway. On the Santa Fe Trail, beside you, I'm riding every hill and dale while shadows hide just like a pretty purple veil. Thereby hangs a tale. I found you. And the mountains that surround you are the walls I build around you along the Santa Fe Trail.
Stay tuned for the Tiki Cha Cha Club.
We better start the show rolling.
Ole, ole, it's Joe time. In the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room,
all the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room.
Welcome to our tropical hideaway, you lucky people, you. If we weren't in the show starting right away, we'd sing the audience too.
All together in the tiki 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 room, in the tiki 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 room.
All the birds sing word and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room.
Our magnificent production is yet to come. So strum the guitar and beat the drum. We've been a hit and we know you adore us. So come on and join us in another chorus.
In the tiki 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 room. In the tiki 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 room.
All the birds sing words and the flowers croon.
In the tiki 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 room.
A little louder.
In the tiki 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 room. All the birds sing words and the flowers croon. In the
taking you to faraway places and bringing them home to you. This is the Tiki Cha Cha Club, where the cocktail nation meets exotica at the corner of Kalakaua Boulevard and Bourbon Street in a little Spanish village, a small discotheque on the Isle of Capri.
In the neighborhood and thought I'd stop by and say hello and howdy and good morning, evening, afternoon, or wherever you're at. Good to see you. And I want to invite you to another hour of that wacky cha-cha. I mean, it's the tacky. No, it's not that either. It's the tinkly cha-cha.